So when I go to places where people don't know me, parties, conventions, one of the first things I usually get asked is, so what do you do for a living? Now, I don't know about you all, but seeing somebody in one of these is uncomfortable for a lot of people. It feels awkward. You don't know what to do. I don't wear this to parties. And just as a quick aside, how many of you have been uncomfortable throughout the first part of the service? I typically don't wear this here. Has it bothered anybody? Okay. Okay. Oh, I love this group. But when I say, actually, I'm a minister, usually one of two things happen. Either they look at me and they go, no, seriously, what do you do? And they look at everything from my hair to the painted toes on my gym shoes. Or this is my very favorite. They try to hide their beer or their mixed drink behind an air molecule. And they swallow their cigarette. And they go, you know, I really love Jesus. And I have to explain that, no, I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister, and please get your beer out of that potted palm, and can we have a conversation? There have been days when I've been really tempted to either say I'm a nurse, which is what I was for years, or I'm a mortician if I don't want to talk to them, and avoid the whole issue. But the reality is that would betray the stole that I wear around my neck. Because I'm a minister with a capital M. That means I answered a call to spend my life doing this work. And I'm trained to do the work of helping people transform and figure out what it is they believe and how to live those values in the world. And I'm answerable to all of you and to ethical and legal codes that control what a minister with a capital M can do. And when I stood up in front of my first church and I was ordained, somebody walked up to me with a stole like this in their hands. They put it around my neck. And the first thing I thought was, oh my God, it is so heavy. It's so heavy. Material. There's no lead weights. In some ways, it always will be heavy. A minister with a capital M is called out from among the people as an equal to serve in a role. And we wear the weight of that unique role no matter where we are. But it's funny. When I stood up in that church and that first stole was put on me, a minute later, 250 people from that church got up and they came forward to put their hands on me. They honored me with a laying on of hands, and in that moment, that weight lifted. And I understood that I don't stand alone completely. They bear the weight of that stole with me. The power of that stole comes from there. And you bear that weight too. We're Unitarian Universalists, and we're held together by something called congregational polity, which says that we believe in a shared ministry, all believers. That's not ministry, the job. Christianity was our spiritual ancestor. And when it emerged out of the idea that everyone was a priest. When Jesus was alive and walking and talking, he spoke directly to people. He didn't say, you have to go get Bill the priest to stand between you and me to interpret what I am saying. He said, I'm going to talk to you. We're going to have some bread together. You and me. We'll work this out. It eliminated the priestly caste that was found in Judaism. Every person was expected to have a personal relationship. And after he died, they continued that idea into saying, you have to have a personal relationship with the risen Jesus. Either with his writing or with the idea that he's the Christ. Each person in those early communities got asked, what do you bring to the table? Who are you among us? They worshiped together, they shared together, and they trusted their own understanding of what it was they brought to the table. So if someone asked one of them, you know, what's your ministry? Might have said, I'm a baker, I bake bread for the group. Somebody else was a fisherman, he caught fish for the group. What's your ministry? How do you serve with love and joy? That idea carried through to 1520, and Martin Luther said, we're all consecrated priests. As it says in 1 Peter chapter 2, you are a royal priesthood, a priestly kingdom. Revelation, through your blood, you've made us into priests and kings. No disparity between there and here. That's why we pulled out a big old altar that a priest would stand behind, but a minister stands with their people. He also wrote, there are indeed priests that we call ministers. They're chosen from among us, and they do things in our name. This is a priesthood which is nothing else than ministry. The Protestant Unitarians and later the Universalists took from this polity, a shared ministry, each congregation calling forth a professional minister if it wants to, but governing as the people find fit. Shared ministry says to the people, what are you good at? What do you love? What do you do for this community? What do you do for this kingdom of faith? But there's more to it than that, and this is the piece that gets really relevant in times like these. You are not just called to share church governance. That's a small part of what ministry is. You are called to share in the work of prophecy. And this is the place where the weight of my stole is heavy. This is the place where I need your hands helping to lift that weight. Theologian James Luther Adams, who is beloved by many of us, who we call JLA, said the prophetic liberal church is not a church where the prophetic function is assigned to only a few. He said, the prophetic liberal church is the church in which persons think and work together to interpret the signs of the times in light of their faith and to make explicit through discussion the thinking that the times demand. The prophetic liberal church is the church in which all members share in the common responsibility to attempt to foresee the consequences of human behavior, both individual and institutional, with the intention of making history in place of being pushed around by it. And he said, only through the prophecy of all believers can we together foresee doom and mend our common ways. Oh my Lord, the stole just got heavy. For some people, JLA's idea is a little horrifying. When I say prophet, even I tend to get a vision of some fuzzy person who hasn't had a bath in quite a while, standing in rags of goatskin with wild hair, somewhere in a desert and having riotous visions. I think of John the Baptist screaming and shouting in the River Jordan. I think of Ezekiel, who was having visions of wheels within wheels. That doesn't sound very much like anything I want to do this century. So I sat down last night because of something someone else said, and I picked up the book of Ezekiel. And okay, I know all the jokes about this guy and the things he was chewing or smoking while he was sitting out in that desert seeing those prophetic visions. Let me reread it. Chapter 13 is a toughie. 8 through 12, Ezekiel said, "Because of your false words and lying visions, I'm against you, declares the Lord God. My hand will be against the prophets who see false visions and utter lying divination. They will not belong to the council of my people or be listed in the records of Israel, nor will they enter the land of Israel. Then you will know I am God. Because they lead my people astray, saying peace when there is no peace. And because when a flimsy wall is built, they cover it up with whitewash. Therefore, tell those who cover it with whitewash that it's going to fall. Rain will come in torrents, and I'll send hailstones hurling down, and violent wind will come forth. And when that wall collapses, will people not ask you, 'Where's the whitewash you covered it with?'" That sounds biblical, sounds fancy. But at the time, it was written in the language of the people. Those are common words. The translation is the problem. What would that look like today if we were prophesying in the same way? What would modern prophecy written in a blog or on Facebook sound like? Let's look at Ezekiel again. Light and love call us to this. We must reject lies and false visions. Someone who leads through lies will never be truly great, nor should they be welcome in our country. As we stand together, you will know we embody love. Because a liar will tell us to accept falsehood in the name of peace, when there is no peace. And will build a flimsy wall and cover it with cheap paint and tell us it will protect us. But we have to tell the wall builders and the wall painters that it will fall. When love rises up and storms against the badly built stones, that wall will fall and people will ask, "Why was this ever built?" When clearly it will not stand. Ezekiel starts to sound a little more promising. Prophecy can sound like a blog post. It can sound like a phone call to a friend. It can sound like the signs of a marcher in Washington, D.C., or the words of a lawyer sitting on the floor doing pro bono work and saying, "I need to be here." It could sound like a letter to a representative. It could sound like talking to a child. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter which political party you are. It matters what you care about. It matters what you're willing to fight for. You can be fiscally conservative and care about people. You can be liberal and a jerk. The values that we hold are what matter. The values are what lead us to prophesy. It doesn't have to come in some kind of biblical sounding words. It doesn't have to come from a deep college education. You are not called to get out on the corner and preach hellfire and brimstone unless you really are called to do that, in which case, okay. But you're called to help bear the weight of this stole. You're called to speak truth to power as you see it. You're called to get up in troubled times and say to those you know, here is what I see, and I won't be quiet. Here is where I plant my feet. Only you know what ministry you are called to. Only you know what speaks to you. Only you know your role. Are you John the Baptist standing out in that river? Maybe. Or maybe you're the quiet prophet just holding up a sign. Maybe you're the guy making buttons in a back room so that somebody else can stand on the corner. Only you can say what work you will do as an act of love and service, as the deeds that we honor in place of the creeds that we can never know what you believe. We know what you do. We know what you say out loud. The Baal Shem Tov, whose teachings I follow, says, your life had better be the testament so that I don't have to read the book. I can read you instead. I can look at your entire life and see what it is you would prophesy. Do you like what people will read when they see you? And if not, what are you going to do? I don't know if you are John the Baptist, if you are Bob Dylan with his guitar. I don't know if you're Lady Gaga or Gandhi. I don't know if your truth and my truth match. I don't know if our political parties match. But I know that without you, this stole is meaningless. The weight of this ministry cannot be borne. It would pull me to my knees. It would pull every minister to their knees. You are the power behind it, and it takes all of us to engage in ministry. As our reading said this morning, we're trying to make the best of a nutty situation. In fact, that's what we're doing all the time. We didn't ask for any of this. So that's it. I want you to put me down in the Gallup poll as someone who helps all the time. There isn't a category for all the time, but there's one that says all the above. So perfect. Put us down as all the above. We are very all the above. All of us. Everybody's just trying to do the best in a nutty situation. It's true. Do your best in a nutty situation. Speak bravely. Rise up when possible. Be very, very all of the above. And I'll help you carry your stole if you'll help me carry mine. Amen.